Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Are you ever?
Yes.
And I'm Michael Sterling.
You are Michael Sterling. Yes. And I am Paul Strolley.
Yes, you
and
are.
And the Starbucks on Riverside, you could store meat in that place. The air conditioning is
really?
So low. Yes. I don't know what it is, if it's like a corporate decision or whatever, but I literally saw my breath walking into the place. Literally.
How did it look?
Yes. Well, it looked like a pumpkin spice latte.
Oh,
that's
okay.
What it looked like.
Yeah. Well, I knew you were there having a little meeting with
people soon to be introduced.
Yes, indeed. So, Paul, look outside the window here, and what are we seeing? We're not seeing 87 degree weather.
No,
today
it's actually
we?
A little.
It's
little
actually like
autumnal.
Getting ready for the Thanksgiving.
For the Thanksgiving.
The Thanksgiving. Are you in town for Thanksgiving?
I am not. I'll be out and about. Details to be decided, but I will not be in Los Angeles. I will be in a lot of different places. Yes.
Oh, mysterious.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know,
it really is mysterious.
I have to stay on top of my stalkers, and I can't give them too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to make it a challenge because often I have to follow them.
Well, so. I won't even start with that subject. So let's get into at least thanking our sponsor before we get too personal here. And we would like to thank our sponsor, Breakdown Services, the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit BreakdownExpress.com.
We'd also like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the Internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts in Southern California. And we're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to our live arts calendar.
Indeed. Now, in corporate New York City, Abby Morgan interviews with Ben Steele for a high-profile marketing job. Sparks fly between them, but will they pursue love or profession? Is it possible to do both? A or B is a romantic comedy that carries two stories in one, turning romance on its head as we see Abby and Ben travel down two parallel lives, pitting destiny versus choice, love versus career, ambition versus passion, and man versus woman. A or B is currently playing to raves at the Falcon Theater in Toluca Lake. With us today, we have of the cast portraying Abby Morgan in this very clever two-hander, please welcome the wonderfully talented Jules Wilcox.
Yay! Oh my God. I get applause.
Jules is here.
Hello.
Is it, were you christened Jules, or is it modified? Were you Julie? Were you Julia?
Julia.
Same as my niece.
There you go.
She went from a Julia to a Jules.
You know, it's a little easier.
Yeah.
One syllable.
Exactly.
So
very attractive young lady with us, very talented, very attractive, has raised the collective appearance of this room exponentially.
Yes, indeed.
You know,
we'll have no argument from me on that.
Oh, you guys.
And our
audience can't tell.
They can.
Yes, they will. Well, check our Facebook page because we'll have a picture of us at the end of the show.
That's right.
And our other in-studio guest,
who is just as pretty,
yes,
in my humble opinion.
I didn't want to say that. I was going to say that, and then you had to say it about yourself.
I know. Now everyone knows I'm arrogant.
This is not going to go well.
Wow.
Our other in-studio guest will be with us for the second half of the hour as well as the next 6 weeks. He began his acting career as a child actor in Sydney, Australia. And built a long career at a beekeeper, apparently.
A long career there
as both a series regular and guest star in dozens of TV shows and international films. Hold the card up, would you, Mark? I can't read it.
Okay, that's right. There it is.
Including a little-known but critically acclaimed indie film called The Matrix. He moved to Manhattan to study acting in 1998. Went on to work in theater regionally and off-Broadway.
This is too long, I realize
in addition,
now.
Yeah, I realized it, too. Well, we don't even have Abby's yet. I'll cut to the bottom here.
No.
Guest starring in multiple television shows based in New York, including all 11 Law & Orders.
Yeah.
He moved to Los Angeles to realize his lifelong dream of standing in for a rather obnoxious radio talk show host who is taking a hiatus. Please welcome the guest that wouldn't leave, the only man we know that can use all three of his names and only sound moderately pretentious, Mark Aidan Gray.
You see, I'm controlling the sound, so I went for rim shot.
Rather than applause?
Rather than applause. I don't know why, but that was my impulse.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Man. Oh, my God.
Okay. He's a control freak.
Uh-oh. He is, I tell you. It's not going to go well.
Mark Aidan Gray. It sounds like an author, doesn't it? Mark Aidan Gray.
That's why I chose it. That's not my real name.
Yeah. Any one of those?
No. Yeah, two out of three are real. Mark and Gray are real. Yeah. But Aidan was a replacement for Abraham. I am Jewish.
Good choice.
And the reason I did that is because of the lack of Jews in the entertainment industry. I didn't want to be discriminated against.
There you go.
So yeah. I changed it.
Yeah. Yes. Mark Abraham Gray. Yeah,
that's a bit too much.
That is fairly Semitic.
It's a lot of
Semitic.
You couldn't
even go shorten and go Mark Abe Gray. It's just, so the meter would be off in saying your name.
Mark Abe Gray. I like that, though.
Yeah. But yet he didn't know. Apparently, you're a recovering Jew. Because you...
yeah.
Because such a they thing? Had a... what do they call
a mezuzah.
A mezuzah.
Yes, which I just found out.
I saw that.
I touched going in, and he jumped down my non-chosen throat.
Paul touched the mezuzah with an air of entitlement that bothered me. As a non-Jew, I didn't quite understand that. And I had to take offense and say something.
Yes. No, but see, the thing is, being Italian, I was just admiring the masonry.
Oh, is that what it was?
I had no idea that's what it was. I just thought it was a doorstop or something that was there on the side.
No, it has a piece of parchment in it, right?
Stolo, I didn't know what it was either until it was explained to me by the other Jew in the office.
Well, now we all know.
Yes, that's right.
60,000 people.
Can I ask
you
what your faith is? If you want to share it,
I was raised evangelical Christian.
Really?
In Missouri.
In Missouri.
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that how they say it?
Well, I'm a Yankee. I'm from northern Missouri, so I say Missouri. But I have family members who say Missouri. For sure.
Would you like to evangelize on this show? Is there anything you'd like to say to
Join
analysis?
Us.
Join us. That's Pippin, isn't it?
It is.
Join
it's nice. On topic. I like it. But more, I'm like a, yogi now.
Yeah.
That's my spiritual. That's as spiritual as I get these days.
Yoga's great.
A little meditation, a little yoga.
And
I was healthy. I was just thinking about that, to do in a production of Pippin of all evangelical Christians and just make the whole thing like a tent show. Well, it is like
it
circus.
It is very much like a tent show.
Yeah.
So that
we're
idea
like
is
doing God's spell all of a sudden.
I have all the great ideas after
He's so
someone
15
else
minutes
has
ago.
Made
Paul, do all your ideas meet with just dead silence?
Well, not when I work the board.
Fair enough.
Because when I work the board, I put the applause and the laughter in there.
Yes.
Michael, did you want to talk about your theatrical outgoing before we start? Or do you want to save it for the arts?
I'm going to do it now.
Chat away.
Kinky Boots, ladies and gentlemen, at the Pantages Theater. Went to the opening last night, and this is right off Broadway, and it's a beautiful show that is written by one Cyndi Lauper and Harvey Fierstein. The book is by Harvey, and Cyndi, of course, did the music.
Can we have a little of your impersonation, Michael? But you're Harvey Fierstein.
Oh, Paul, I can't. I can't possibly. I'm busy. I'm on Broadway. What are you doing?
Wow.
Would love to. If it didn't ruin your vocal cords, it would delight me to hear your appraisal of Kinky Boots as Harvey Fierstein. But we'd need an expectorant halfway through.
Exactly. And I needed a strong drink after that, too. No, it was a fun evening and a beautiful production of it, I must say, is the national tour that's coming through Los Angeles, and it is starring some wonderful people. Kyle Taylor Parker, who was one of the Angels, it's a little group in the show that's referred to often. In the original Broadway production, he was in one of the Angels, and now he's playing the lead of Lola, which is a transvestite character in the show. And Stephen Booth from Avenue Q and Glory Days and Dogfight, he stars as a shoe factory owner, Charlie Price, and is absolutely wonderful, as is Lindsay Nicole Chambers from Broadway's Hairspray, Legally Blonde, and Craig Wales, this is a tough name to say, Waletzko, W-A-L-E-T-Z-K-O. How would you say that?
You got me.
That's tough, right?
I don't even remember how
Craig,
to spell it.
Craig, you do a wonderful job as the character Don. He really, really does. He rocks. And Gracie Stockdale, who is making her touring debut as Nicola. It's so well-mounted. It's such great fun. It's kind of... to better describe it to you, it's kind of La Cacio Fall meets Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Oh, wow.
Meets
okay.
Billy Elliot. And then you have Kinky Boots.
So a real macho show.
Yeah. It actually is a real macho show.
Well, it's like in a factory, and it's just about this. It's the whole premise is that they're trying to keep this factory afloat by embracing the whole market of... shoes for
appealing to a niche. They need to find that, but they're not selling shoes. That's the problem, because the shoes are so boring and they're so typical. Right. So the business is going down, and the young lead inherits the business from his father, who passes.
Oh, wow.
And he's you know, beside himself on what to do, and then this transvestite walks into his life and convinces him, and he gets this idea. So everything's happy in the end and wonderful. But it's a great score. I was a little surprised that it wasn't more Cyndi Lauper related. When you know, we hear those songs of hers in our head, but she did an amazing job. Actually, it's not easy to write a Broadway show.
Has she done that before? Has she written?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
And the thing is that, and just speaking about that Cyndi Lauper style, she has no definable style. My wife Monica has followed Cyndi Lauper forever, and if you listen to like the third, fourth, and fifth album, she, you know, it's not all Girls Just Want to Have Fun. It's beautiful ballads, mm-hmm. and she did a wonderful album that's all like big band stuff.
Right.
And,
no way.
Right. Yeah,
and the Big 11
and pipes. Like, she's got a range. Like,
yeah.
Mariah
Carey. She's got pipes. Yeah.
And the Big 11 o'clock number in the show is done by the young man that does play the inherited owner of the shoe factory, and it's killer.
Yeah.
Killer.
Transvestites nice. Just Want to Have Fun. I believe that's the name of it.
Wow. There it is.
But go see it. Pantages Theater. Can't go wrong. It's there through November 30th, and you can visit them at HollywoodPantages.com for tickets. And I urge you to experience live theater in this kind of way. We're very lucky to have a theater like the Pantages and the Nederlander Organization and our beautiful Amundsen Theater and the Center Theater Group downtown to be able to see these types of shows.
And this quality, you know, yeah, I always high say quality. It's Broadway quality at a third of the price.
And gorgeous. The theater is gorgeous inside. Yeah. You spend 15 minutes just looking at the ceiling.
Stunning. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And so, I'm a sucker for musical. I don't see enough musicals.
Yeah.
And every time I see a musical, I'm always weeping right. First
too.
Number, I'm just crying immediately.
Really?
Seriously, I'm a sucker for them.
Really?
I need to see more of them.
Oh,
it's a spectacle and just like the grandeur and so much going into it. It's a spectacle.
And the Pantages sets that table walking in because you're just like, you know.
Well, they know how to do it. They've been doing it so long. They know how. They've got it all down.
Oh, indeed. Sorry.
Wow.
Oh, you're okay?
Nice.
Yeah, sorry.
An accident, sorry. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ask me how old I am, Michael.
How
I've
old
never
are
sat
you?
Here. I've never sat at this table like Man of War. Mark, would you introduce the lovely lady to my right?
I would love to introduce her. Our first guest was born and raised in rural Mysore. Is that how you... I'm Australian.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Missouri.
Mysore? Missouri. Thank you.
Mysore. I like that.
Mysore. Her hometown Lancaster
You said
was,
my salary.
My salary. Her hometown Lancaster was known for being a circus town, and it was the home base for the Elephant Man, for Bob Melvin, and W.P. Hall's Circus Menagerie. And it was often said that children from Lancaster didn't have to run away to join the circus because the circus had run away to them. She ran away to her own circus of sorts by age 11. She played Olivia in Twelfth Night at a Shakespeare camp where the acting bug was officially caught. And then she went on to study acting at the University of Missouri and worked briefly off Broadway before attending the UCLA School of Theater, Film, and Television.
I'm sorry, that's UCLA.
UCLA, thank you. Putting me in the inner circle there, I like that. Where she received an MFA in acting and participated in intensive workshops with Sir Anthony Hopkins, Annette Bening, and Fiona Shaw, among others. And I want to talk to you about Fiona Shaw.
Along with her extensive TV and film credits, her LA stage credits include work with Rogue Machine, one of our favorite theaters in town, Tucker Smallwood, a great friend who's been on the show a number of times, Pacific Resonant Theater, and A Noise Within. She is currently enjoying her Falcon Theater debut in the role of Abby in the world premiere of A or B. Please welcome Jules, formerly Julia Wilcox.
Love it. Applause again. We live for that.
It's amazing.
Just need to have that,
spare
like,
no
me
expense,
around.
Jules.
How you doing?
I'm good. Yeah. I'm good. Had a show last night. We have Wednesday shows over at the Falcon, and it was a great crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Really Excellent. Fun.
It seems about 140 people over there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I love that space. I love the intimacy of the room.
Mm-hmm.
I love the fact that, and we always talk about this because it's Southern California and you drive everywhere. It's one of those places you can park and you have like a dozen food options.
Yes, to look like is terrific.
Yeah,
it's a great area. I've never worked up there or spent much time in Toluca Lake, Burbank area. And it's so walkable and... Yeah. You know, we'd rehearse all day and find a new place to go to lunch every day and hang out and have a drink afterwards.
Is it Tommy Nolan's or Timmy? Is it Tommy Nolan's or Timmy Nolan's?
Timmy Nolan's. Timmy they Nolan's. Know us well over there.
And Bob's Big Boy.
Yeah. Bob's and Moe's.
And Priscilla's, a nice little cafe.
Priscilla's is great.
Patty's restaurant.
I went
Patty's,
to a Bob.
Yeah.
I went to a Bob's Big Boy, but it was in West Hollywood. And it was a completely different.
Oh boy!
Oh, there we
what
go.
Kind of
there
sound
it was dark inside.
Yep. Waiting for that one.
Yeah, there it is.
And they were just serving meat. That's
yeah. Oh.
Getting good use, that rim shot.
Back to Jules.
How do you like your meat? That was what the server said.
That's what they said. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, my God. Jeff, before we descend too much further, can you give our listeners sort of a synopsis of A or B?
Well, it's a romantic, like classic romantic comedy written by Ken Levine, who worked on characters like Sam and Diane for Cheers.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So like, that's
he
the level.
Those characters?
He was an original writer on that show.
Oh,
and he
wonderful.
Was on it.
That's
great. Won an Emmy or was at least nominated. So he, you know, gets the romantic comedy thing for sure. So it's a story about Abby and Ben in the corporate world in New York, and we have two parallel stories, one in which they have a working relationship, and in the other, they have a romantic relationship. And you can imagine what hijinks ensue in both of those situations. So,
is it just a two-hander?
It's a two-hander.
Okay. Are they wacky and zany hijinks?
They're pretty wacky.
Excellent.
Oh, yeah.
If they're not wacky, they're not hijinks.
Exactly.
That's what I felt that way.
But it's a really fun, fast-paced show. It's about 90 minutes. And
intermission?
In an intermission, yeah. Yep. And the audience has just been loving it. So it's a lot of laughs, and it feels kind of like a sitcom. And it has a very sitcom-y feel, and our writer is from that world. So it kind
well,
of
it's funny there's something. Okay. I'm sorry.
No, please.
In a comedy like that, like you're describing, which sounds like great fun, and in that particular theater environment, which is a you know, not a lot of people, right? 140 people, mm-hmm. but they're close to you. The stage is a thrust stage, mm-hmm. as I recall.
A bit of a thrust, yeah.
Yeah. Do they talk to you at any point in time? Do they respond to things that you say?
Every audience is so different, you know? And with a comedy, they're interacting with you nonstop. We, in rehearsal, we didn't want to get, you know, too cocky, but the playwright and the director would say, you know, we're going to have to hold for laughs
right.
here, and here, at least. And you know, we're like, okay, well, sure, okay. And then we got in, of course, right into previews, and they are in it with us, laughing, talking back to us. Abby makes kind of a bad move. It's a few points in the play. And I had this, she must have been like a mom or grandma. She was just like, no, no. No, she didn't. And luckily, she redeems herself at a certain point later in the play. But they're very active and involved with us, for sure. And it's all ages, too, because we have a lot of people our age coming, our buds. And then, they're subscribers who have been subscribing to the Falcon for decades. And so we're playing to like all ages, which is really fun
that
because
is.
At like Rogue Machine, we're playing to mostly young people. Oh. And at A Noise Within, I find that we're either playing for like schools or, you know, an older crowd. And that's kind of what you see coming to especially classical theater. So it's really fun to have a real broad range of people.
Well, yeah. not only fun, but also important. Mark and I were talking before the show today about this project that he's working on that's going to be that it almost not by design but just by virtue of what it is bringing young people into the theater, because you look at the median age of the ticket buyer now and it's what like
112 yeah, something that's the last number we had.
Yeah, there are a lot of oxygen tanks and walkers walking in on Sunday matinees for sure, which is great that there's a community that's supporting theater.
That's
but
right, appreciates it.
As a young person in the theater community, if I'm not in a show, I'm going to see shows at least twice a week. And I developed
really?
That.
You're able to see that many?
I went to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, oh, 5 years ago, and you see like 8-10 shows a day, including you. Then you do your own.
Right.
And, like, that's just
that's
normal,
fantastic.
And it was so enriching. And I after I had that experience, I was like, you know what? The 99 seat community alone has so many shows going on every week, and then you have great houses, you know, like big houses like the Geffen and CTG, and you can get as a young person or a person who's in equity, you can get a good discount ticket and see at least, you know, 2 or 3 shows a week.
Mm. Well, you should be an Ovation voter.
I have been an Ovation voter, but I had to stop because I've been pretty much working in theater nonstop for the last 3 years, which, knocking on wood, you know, it's been really great. Right. But, it's also, I'm seeing my friends and everything, so I'm actually not a very impartial voter. That's for sure.
Right. Mark, you mentioned something about Fiona Shaw. I have to know what this is.
Well, just because I saw Fiona Shaw's Madea.
I did too.
Well, okay, so you'll tell me if you agree with me or not, but that was some of the most stunning acting I've ever been witness to.
She's genius.
She is genius, and she turned a role that can typically be very dark and heavy into she introduced humor into places that was dazzling, that was just put you completely off balance. Mm. It's almost impossible to describe what she did. How did you feel about it?
Yeah, it was unbelievable. It was like a transformative night in theater for me. Yeah. There are two performances I would say that have done that, and that's her Madea and Mark Rylance's Olivia in 12th Night. And I had a chance to workshop with both of them while they were doing, they came and did them for UCLA live while I was at UCLA. And it was extraordinary, those performances. She's just unreal.
Was she good in a workshop environment with students?
Yeah, she was. It was more of an interview type thing, but she was, we didn't get to get up and work with her like some of the people that we had master classes with, but she's just had so much knowledge and confidence that I saw that you have to have that going into some of those roles. She just takes it and owns it.
She does.
There's a role that she just did where she played Jesus's mother. Wasn't really Jesus. But she talks about her son being killed, and she goes through this like horrific process of dealing with her child being killed. And later you find out that she's Mary. But it was a project that she developed that should have been like horrific, but it was beautiful.
That's what she does.
That's what she does. She kind of takes these very human, but epic stories and makes them at times charming.
Yes, she lifts them up. Mm-hmm. She really does. Wow, that's exciting.
It's one of those things where, especially like Madea, it's like, how do you sustain, the introduction of humor or the introduction of, dare I say, lightheartedness, if it's possible in Madea.
Yeah.
You need that buoyancy, that mm-hmm. energy to sustain that. Otherwise, you just, you want to open a vein halfway through the first act,
Well, Shakespeare did it right, every...
Wait, you see what I just saw. someone comes out and talks about the garden.
Yeah, and in every, there are light moments in all of his darkest plays. There have to be. We need that. That's part of the human condition, is that we lighten things up when things get way too heavy.
Right.
But it's interesting because my co-star and I, Jason Deckert, who plays Ben in A or B, he and I have been paired together in more like Shakespeare. We just did Pericles last year. We did by Shakespeare, and we did George Bernard Shaw's The Doctor's Dilemma, and it's like, again, really heavy, heavy, deep stuff. So it's such a pleasure to go from that to like we're doing a romantic comedy.
Yeah, but also how nice to work with someone that you've worked with repeatedly.
Yeah.
Did you know that? Did you both just audition and that was just luck of the draw? Or
well, it kind of I don't know if I should if I get. I
Are you
I
seeing
can tell
one
this.
Another?
No, we're best buds. But I'd been cast, and the man who was cast as Ben originally booked a TV gig, a big TV job. So he had to drop out, and they had to hustle to recast. And
I felt bad when I had to drop out.
You're a giver.
No, you would have been tremendous.
Well, we missed you. Jason, I begged him to come in, and because he's like, I'm taking a break from theater. I was like, no, you're not. And so he came in. And we just have chemistry that people have told us since we started working together. And it's, we just, I get tickled by him on stage. Just,
that
we
is
just,
beautiful.
We can't help but, like, you know,
was I'm that blocked? A, is it blocked?
The actual tickling. Yes. No, just delighted. I'm always delighted by being on stage with him.
And being in a two-hander, is just, you get on stage and you go on that ride, and it's just the two of you working off each other.
Yep, that's it. That's all you got. And the audience, of course, in this case.
Now, I wanted to bring
much
up
like
something.
What we do here.
That's right.
Totally.
We're a four-hander.
Michael has tickled me endlessly during the show.
Where was that when I came to watch last week?
We took the webcams.
Your time is coming, Mr.
Whoa, really?
Next week.
Now, I had a question for you based on, you know, we were talking about dark material. You know, I did some research on you.
Oh, boy.
And now, I know that you were in a movie called Deadline.
Oh, yes.
Which makes me want to do my In a World of Fear trailer voice. But then I also saw, now this is about a couple who, correct me if I'm wrong here, but a couple who buys a house. It's a kind of a Paranormal Activity situation. Mm-hmm. At one point, the husband finds human remains in a crawl space.
Yep.
And then, which is a great, isn't that great when you buy a house and you find human remains in a crawl space? That's what you want the first week.
Yeah. At least they're in a crawl space and not like in the den.
That's true.
Yeah.
And it wasn't on an Indian burial ground, at least.
Okay, so. Right.
Especially if the realtor has said, yeah, no one's died here.
But I was going to say, you call your broker at that point, I'm sure. But then, are you also in Deadline 2?
Well, they're getting the funds together to make it, so.
Okay.
And is that for all the unanswered questions that Deadline 1
exactly.
left?
Now, I'm leading to a question for you, which is that you also were in Paraphobia.
Yes.
A found footage Blair Witch star. Is that right?
Yes.
And can I just read quickly the description of the film? Because I think it's... And I want you to comment on this.
Go
is
for
that
it.
All right?
Go for it.
Kevin, an unsuccessful filmmaker, becomes obsessed with beautiful actress Nikki Navarro and is soon filming her every move. We quickly learn that Kevin is keeping a horrifying secret, and a shocking revelation in Nikki's bedroom leads down a rabbit hole of sexual perversion and homicide. I don't think we ever want rabbit hole and sexual perversion in the same sentence. But... wow, tell us about what's up with that.
Well, I just saw a screening of it. They put the final touches on it a couple weeks ago, and it was actually surprisingly funny.
Really?
It was one of those things where we knew that there was humor in it, but it's so dark, right? I mean, you can just tell by the synopsis it's going to be super scary and dark. But then there are these really light, great moments, and it relieved the audience, the test audience. Every time we were in there, that you know, that we'd jump when something scary would happen, and then like moments later we'd be laughing. So it's a really fun film.
You need the exhale. You need the exhale, or else the suspenseful moments don't work.
Yeah, it throws it off balance. Yeah. And so it's I don't know exactly what the next step is with it. You know, you do these independent films, and it's like, what happens? And this one's in association with Blumhouse. It does the Paranormal
Activity.
Would you like to be Hollywood's new Scream Queen? Would that be fine with you?
I think it's fun.
Yeah.
I think it's fun because I've done all this Greek and Shakespeare and like epic situations and circumstances, and there's something I really like about that. It's just like going that distance, you know, as opposed to, I mean, I like mumblecore stuff too, but it's, I like juicy circumstances like that. So there are a lot of horror films being made. There's just so many, so I think that's why you see a lot of we do them.
Yeah, they're an easy sell.
They're an easy sell for sure.
Is Scream Queen 2 dated a term, by the way? Did I just
I would
myself?
Love to be like
not at
Jamie
all.
Lee
there
Curtis
may be some poor soul in West Hollywood that's threatened by that.
But, you know. Wow, yes, I'm sure there are.
I'm going to tell people about how to go see an ARB.
Okay. Yeah, please do.
At the beautiful Falcon Theater in beautiful Toluca Lake, and it's on stage. It's been on stage for the last month, but it comes up for closing on November 16th, folks, so you still have time to see it. And, of course, the remaining performances are this evening and this evening, tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Those are at 8 p.m. And Sunday, however, is at 4 p.m. And it's very simple to get tickets, which are in various categories, by simply calling 818-955-8101 or visit their website, which is Falcon Theater with the R-E spelling of theater at the end, .com. FalconTheater.com.
And if you would, Michael, would you mind continuing on and do our arts calendar for
us? I will.
And then we'll introduce the other guests that we have and continue to talk talk to Jules.
I will do that. Let me find where I am.
I will add, I did check in with the box office last night, trying to get some extra tickets for myself, for my friends.
Tickets are going
and
fast.
It is they are going fast. Yeah. So get
that's great.
Get
news.
Your tickets
and
now.
It plays through when? How many more opportunities?
It plays through this weekend.
Oh, just through this
just
weekend.
Just through the 16th.
Oh, okay. Yeah. As always, final weekend. Everyone puts it off. So grab those seats. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And you might even come out and say hello to the audience? No?
Oh, we do. Yeah.
Oh, do?
Yeah, after the show. We're always out there.
Well, trust me,
a playwright
me, folks,
comes every night.
That's worth the
so we hang out with him.
Ticket oh, right
cool.
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. To meet
an informal talk back.
That's right.
For sure.
So, yes, I will do that. I'm so confused here. Oh, here we go. I'm sorry. I'm not confused at all. Based on the celebrated novel by Daniel Wallace in the acclaimed Columbia Motion Pictures, Based on the celebrated novel by Daniel Wallace and the acclaimed Columbia Pictures film directed by Tim Burton, the musical adaptation of Big Fish made a splash on Broadway last year when five-time Tony Award-winning director and choreographer Susan Stroman of the producers, the Scottsboro Boys, teamed with music and lyrics by Tony nominee Andrew Lippa, who wrote The Addams Family and The Wild Party, to develop the new book by esteemed screenwriter John August. Big Fish, Charlie, and the Chocolate Factory. Those are his credits. Like the story itself, the critics were over the moon with praise. Musical Theater West, down in Long Beach, recreates the excitement of the original Broadway show, bringing to the West Coast premiere the original sets and costumes.
The show stars two 2014 LA Stage Alliance Ovation Award nominees in the leading roles, Jeff Skowron, who earned two nominations for Best Actor in a Musical for his roles in Les Mis and The Producers, takes on the role of Edward Bloom, and Rebecca Johnson, who recently earned an Ovation nomination for her role as Elizabeth in Musical Theater West's Young Frankenstein, takes on the role of Sandra Bloom. Big Fish plays through this weekend only at the Carpenter. A lot of things ending this weekend. This weekend only at the Carpenter Performing Arts Center on the CSULB. I'm assuming that's California State University Long Beach campus.
Yes.
In Long Beach. Tickets available at the most amazing URL. I don't know how they got this. Musical.org.
Can I just ask? I wasn't listening. Could you just repeat all of that again?
Sure. We'll do it again backwards without vowels.
Fantastic.
Michael, would you introduce Mark so we can chat with him and he'll stop insulting me?
I will. On his, our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, moved to Los Angeles in 2007, just in time to sit on his ass doing nothing while he waited for the writer's strike to end.
Yeah.
He has appeared on many primetime network and cable shows over the last few years and is what's pretentiously called a top-of-the-show guest star. In an upcoming episode of the TNT hit Rizzoli and Isles, which will air over the winter. He also has a supporting role in the film Love is All You Need, starring Emily Osment, sister of Sixth Sense star Haley Joel Osment, which is currently in post-production, and has an interesting story premise that he is absolutely not allowed to discuss at any time at all.
Absolutely not.
Yes. Even if he is asked repeatedly.
That's right.
So we're going to ask you about six or seven times, Mark, during this program to discuss that matter. He will also be my guest host through the end of the year, as Mr. Strolley, I said earlier, joins a group. Oh, he didn't say this. He just said he was going away, but he didn't say exactly where. So now we're going to tell you.
Yes.
He is joining a group of monks. You heard me. Monks on Mount Shasta in a spiritual retreat. This particular order, the Morenas, monks have taken a modified vow of silence, speaking only at mealtime and using only lines from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. We wish him good luck and hope that our next guest knows what he's getting himself into. Let's welcome him. Please welcome Mark Aidan Gray. Hey.
This controlling sound. Hello.
We're out of time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's right. That joke, that Rick Moranis. By the way, Paul earlier said to me he was going to a monkery, and I had to tell him. I believe the word is monastery, but, you know, we can be a little
free. Funny, you corrected me with that. I remember it differently. So what can't you say about this movie?
Yeah, I'm going to launch into it. It's now got too much of a build-up, but it's got a pretty good story hook. So Love is All You Need was a short that received quite a lot of attention. It's very topical. It's about acceptance and tolerance and, you know, heterosexuality and homosexuality. And the hook of the movie is that in the world of the film, heterosexuality is considered you know, the offensive thing to the community and the thing that is the outlier. And so...
Interesting twist.
Yes, and the lead villain, played by Elizabeth Rome, who was on Law and Order for several seasons, so she incites these kids to persecute and eventually kill this young hetero boy, as my character says. And I play the detective who is coming to get her and knows what she did and interrogates her. And then we elope to Sicily. That's not true. That last bit is not true. The Sicily bit.
Okay. So you elope, but you go to Sheboygan.
Yes, that's right. We're Toledo. So yeah, it's got a really good hook. And the director, K. Rocco Shields, who's a TV veteran, but this is her first feature as director. She said that the short just got incredible response, and from that she got quite a bit of good funding. So,
well, let me ask you: have you seen the short?
I have not seen the short. Do not tell her that.
Okay. No, because I was just curious about things like that, because I know that, I mean, with the exception of like Sling Blade, which was some folks call it a Sling Blade, was the short that Sling Blade was what was
based on. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. And my concern with stuff like that is a short is, for me, I love short films. I have a short film that just finished Festival Circuit and did very well. It's its own art form. It's like the last great poetry of filmmaking, because you're not obligated by marketplace. You're not obligated by a narrative. It has to be 90 minutes.
A celluloid haiku,
if you would.
Thank you. Yes. If I won't, yes.
But my question is, is there... My worry, rather, is always how do you sustain that for a full-length film? But if you didn't see the short,
I am the person. I can answer that.
I guess we should just move on.
No, I can answer that.
That's the next thing we should do.
And my answer is that I only read my lines in the screenplay, so I have no idea what the movie's about. But, no, look, it plays very well. I mean, the way it builds, at least in the screenplay, is excellent. And, you know, as you know, Jules, some screenplays you're reading, Paul, right? They're not good off the page, and this one moved well on the page. So, yeah, I think it's going to be good.
Were you the one who was telling me the Michael Caine quote about whether he does a movie or not?
I've heard that.
Michael Caine, they asked him why he selects a movie. He goes, I wish I could do... Can you do Michael Caine?
Actually, that is not one that I can do. I'm sorry. No.
But he would say, I get the script, and I read the first page, and I read the last page. If my character is on both pages, then I take the film.
Wow. Nice. Actually, I'm going to do an improv. I want to start a tradition of doing crappy impressions. Mm-hmm. Oh. So I'll do my best Michael Caine if someone wants to improve on it.
Okay, sure.
My name is Michael Caine. See, that was horrific.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That was shocking. Yeah.
Do
you do any impressions, Jules?
I don't.
You don't?
Nothing of Michael Caine?
No.
You have such a mellifluous voice, one would think.
Maybe
that
I should start practicing, I guess.
Well, we heard yours was Harvey Fierstein.
Oh, Harvey, yes. Thanks for asking, Paul. Yes.
And I only do one. I do one impersonation, and it's so specific. It's not only an actor, but it's an actor in a particular film, and it's Nicolas Cage in Peggy Sue Got Married.
Oh, I've heard this one. This is terrible.
What is with you, Peggy Sue? Last week you say if you love me, you won't. This week you say if you love me, you will. Woman. Humiliator.
See, that's brilliant.
Thank you for saying that.
It's also...
It's like Daffy Duck.
It's actually Pokey from Gumby and Pokey, too.
Oh.
Is the other... But that's... I mean, you watch a movie. That's dead on, I'm telling you. I prepared this soundbite.
That made my Michael Caine sound like Michael Caine. Now,
who else do you have?
I have Sean Connery. I do a good show.
Oh, no, that I can hear.
You ready?
Yeah.
You've gone too far this time, Blofeld.
Yeah, see, that's very good.
That's not bad.
That's really very strong.
But I did have a question related to Jules, although this doesn't relate to her personally, I'm sure. But Sturlo, do you know what paraphobia means?
Did you just call me Sturlo?
Sturlo. Yeah. That's what he would be called in Australia, is Sturlo.
He said that's what your nickname would be.
Yep, Sturlo.
Why is that?
We just do weird things to names.
Oh,
all right. We just destroy names, and it would be Sturlo. But that's an affectionate nickname.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you know what paraphobia... I looked it up. Do you know what paraphobia is?
Afraid of the paranormal?
No, it's actually... does anyone know?
Afraid of paragraphs?
This one actually relates more to Paul, really, out of anyone in this room. It's actually... Well, Jules, do you want to tell our listeners what...
It's a fear of sexual perversion.
Fear of sexual perversion.
I have no
That's
fear
how you
of
saw
that.
A movie, folks.
A fear of sexual perversion.
A fear of sexual perversion.
Within oneself or just...
Or from others.
From others.
Is it from others? I actually can't remember. Is that what it's?
Others, yeah.
Oh, fear of others' sexual perversions.
Can I just ask about this segue and why we're just...
It's a segue down a dark alley into a brick wall. I'm not sure where this is going.
Exactly.
Into a
rabbit hole. There you go. Yes.
But I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was interesting.
You're blushing.
I know. It's,
wow. Mr. Aidan Gray.
My wife is listening. That's why.
Victoria. Victoria. I want to see you in the kitchen when we go.
Yes.
So, sir, are you? I wanted to ask, in this film that you're talking about, that you've just appeared in or just worked on, are you using your beautiful Australian accent or are you using an American accent?
I rarely get to use my Aussie. I've been here since 1998 and have worked on stage and in front of the camera almost exclusively as an American. Sometimes...
Can you do that for us?
No, you can just go to my website, Stella, and just look at my reel.
I've looked at your reel.
I know, I'm sure you have. Thank you. Yes.
Dance, little monkey, dance!
Dance! But it's... The American for Aussies is actually pretty easy because it's the draw, the muscles are pretty loose, so we kind of slide into it pretty easily. I might do a little here and there.
Yeah, do one.
You know,
love the lovely actress Lucy Honigman, who I did a show with at the Edgemar Center Theater, is also from Australia, and she was saying that one of the things that made it so easy for her is the saturation of American television down there.
And I say that to people all the time when they say, how do you do our accent? And I say, well, if you'd grown up with Australian accents on your television from age 3, you would be able to do it too. It really makes a huge difference.
Yeah. What do you think, I'm going to ask a question now. What do you? Because I'm always wondering, like, there's so many Australian actors now. Like, I keep running into them, and like I was between me and another Australian girl for a play recently, and I ended up getting it because she couldn't do the accent.
Oh wow!
But I thought it was so interesting that that comes up so often. What do you think that is?
But that Aussies are
why there's so many Aussies?
So many Aussies. I know. I think that's a combination of just the appeal of Australians and Australia in general.
You guys are so charming.
We have a cachet about us, yeah. And then you add to that, I think the Australian sensibility is suited to acting, which is just very grounded. You know, no BS. And I think Australians aren't intimidated, therefore, to kind of go forth and do stuff.
Well, and also, I mean, you know, you can achieve fame in Australia, and it pretty much stays in Australia.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
And all of you then say, hey, I'm going to America now. Because I've been at the Australian consulate, you know, for an evening or so there and met all these amazing stars of film and television consulate, you know, for whatever the event is, and yet you've never heard of them.
Yes.
But they're all here because they want to accelerate their career in on this turf.
And in fairness to the U.S., although people say, why are there so many good actors coming out of Australia, which there are, I do have to say, in fairness to the U.S., that the depth of talent in America cannot be replicated in Australia. And the easy way to find that out is to go down there and watch some of the television. That the top level of talent is as good as anywhere, but beneath that, you don't have much backing that up. Whereas here, I find, just think about regional theater. You go to a regional theater in this country and see excellent actors and excellent production. You don't have that.
Ashland, Oregon, or, you know, like going to, I have friends in like the Nashville theater scene, and they're stellar.
Yes.
And one would not think of that right off the bat, right? The Nashville theater scene.
Or that it even existed.
Well, look at Actors Theater of Louisville is one of the most cutting edge theaters in the country.
Right. Yeah.
Just, you know.
So, yeah, you get the
cream. I never liked Aussies. Never did.
Is that right?
Really?
Yeah. Don't like Australian as a people. Not as individuals. I'm just heroically racist.
Yeah, good for you. I support you in that.
Yeah. Excuse me. That's
well, look at what's the film that's the best example of that, of what Jules was saying, is L.A. Confidential. I mean, both male leads, but two of the three male leads, not Spacey, of course, and then also the guy who Simon Baker.
Yes,
has a small role in that, but it's very Aussie heavy.
It really, and rightly so. That's what we love to steal jobs from you lot as much as we can.
We noticed.
Well, Simon did a good job of that, didn't he?
He's done very well, hasn't he?
He has.
Yes, well,
interesting man. Is he as interesting? Do you know him?
I've never met Simon Baker. No.
Everyone who I've asked that question to, and some do know him, say he is pretty much like that guy.
That's what I've heard as well.
Pretty much.
Rusty Schwimmer. Do we have Rusty on the show?
No.
My friend Rusty Schwimmer, phenomenal actress from Chicago. Rusty is in The Perfect Storm. She's done a bunch of different movies. She's a wonderful barfly in The Perfect Storm. She's got a huge mane of red hair, and she's an incredible presence up there. And she did a mentalist, and she said that he is just like exactly that guy, and just one of those people that is just ridiculously good looking. Like, you would think that just like on film. She said, film is nothing compared to walking in a room and just seeing
stuff. Really? Well, he does have a very unusual presence and whole demeanor.
Very charismatic. Just,
he creates strange stirrings in me. That's all I can say. If that tells you what you need to know, then
Victoria,
strange,
call me after the show, will you?
Strange but uncomfortable, or strange and oddly familiar?
Pleasurably uncomfortable. Sure, absolutely. Why not?
Pleasurably uncomfortable.
Jules, I have another question for you.
Okay, we got five before we do our... we're in our five, our final five. So ask her, and then we'll ask her about her onstage mishap.
Okay. You did Tim Burton style workshops on your farm.
Oh yeah.
And I wanted to ask you about, and I need to say full disclosure that I despise Tim Burton's movies as a rule. I don't want to alienate you here, but I want to know what your favorite Burton film is, and then I also want to know what, well, let's not call it the worst one you've seen, but your least favorite.
Oh my, I'm a huge fan because he creates companies of actors, you know, and I like that sort of community thing.
That's cool.
And then I also, I love the visual aspect. I loved Frankenweenie when I was a kid, the short, going back to like shorts versus the long form. I loved the short live action one. And I watched Beetlejuice every day for probably 3 years and Edward Scissorhands. But yeah, that's why I would try to recreate them and try to do my own claymation, which I did very poorly. But I'm such a huge fan. I like Big Fish, going back to the play that they're doing.
Love Big Fish.
I loved that film. I'm seeing that play this weekend when I'm not doing my own.
Do you have friends in it?
Larry Carpenter is the director, and he just directed me in Macbeth, and he is a wonderful, wonderful director. He comes from New York. He's Tony nominated, and now he directs, I think, General Hospital. I think so. He directs a soap, and he's been directing theater. So I'm going to go see that for him, and I'm sure it's great, and for Tim Burton. But I don't think I've seen a Tim Burton movie that I haven't liked.
Really?
Even the bad ones. I can't say that I didn't.
Into him.
I'm just into him.
Okay. And you just don't like his style, or you just don't...
His style is... He's brilliant at creating visuals. And I have liked some of his movies. But the tone, we just don't meet up, Tim and I. You know, it's just... Oh. So my brother doesn't like it either. When we went to see Sleepy Hollow, we came out of that movie and I said, what did you think? And he said, well, I found that sleepy and hollow. Oh, yes, thank you.
Actually, yeah. I would say in
Dark
my
Shadows
mind,
was disappointing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say those.
Ed Wood is brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I love that movie.
I would agree with
you
there.
The woman who cuts my hair lives in the house that was Ed Wood's house that they used for the film.
Really?
So every time I go there, it's like walking into Ed Wood's house. Four doors on one street. It's very cool.
I was telling Mark, just really quickly, that I was walking around my neighborhood and Martin Landau was sitting on his porch. I didn't realize he was my neighbor. And he had me come up and sat with me for like 2 hours telling me like stories about the actor studio.
Really?
And
he just
talking
called
about,
you up? Did he know you?
Well, we have a mutual friend, and she said, if you ever see him, he lives in your neighborhood, and say hi from her name.
He's been reported for things like this before.
Wow, taking down Landau.
Yeah,
okay.
So I got to hear the whole story about how he got Ed Wood. And Tim Burton called him, and he said he hung up on him because he thought it was a prank call.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
So.
We had his wife on the show.
Yes, we did.
Yeah,
we did.
Barbara Bain?
Yes,
Bain.
She's wonderful.
Who did Mission Impossible.
That's right.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, it's that time.
We have to baptize
minutes left.
You, Jules.
We have to, we're going to ask Jules to share an onstage mishap, something that went wrong. And you said you have one from this particular production.
Oh, yeah, just from last weekend. So the premise of the show is, you know, two parallel stories. And with that, I have to change my clothes multiple times during the show. And, I think we do know where this is going. So I have like 15 changes in 90 minutes. Like, it makes no sense. But I was changed. We had a zipper problem in our dress rehearsals. And so we have to wax all the zippers to make sure that they go up and down on the dresses. And I had a substitute dresser come in. And she didn't realize that, I don't think, that to wax the zippers. So we're trying to get me on stage, and we've timed all the changes to 5 seconds or under.
Holy cow. So quick and changes. Yeah.
Oh, like, quick. Everyone's
must be underdressed on everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You just got to see it. But she couldn't get the zipper up. And I could hear the music changing. I was like, we just got to go for it. And my dress is completely open. And I'm having to just pretend like it's not.
Oh, what? So Now, did you have to, were you able to favor the back?
Oh, yeah. I never turned away from the audience. And
That actress has the best posture
I've
ever
right?
seen.
She just stays open to the audience the whole time. How great. But then I have to, like, run off stage, and, like, my dress is falling off of me most of the time.
Well, that's not such a bad thing.
And how long were you on stage in that particular scene?
That scene was probably, like, 4 minutes or something. Okay, so thank God. But she's supposed to not be slutty in that scene, and it just that's what she's working on, and all of a sudden it kind of changes things to make her seem like
she
is
the one.
And that was the night my parents were there.
Yes.
Of course,
everybody.
Perfect.
You know what? I just want to get one thing in real quickly. LA's Next Great Stage Star, something I produce every year at the club, Jennifer Kranz, this year's winner, is making her cabaret debut.
Oh, wonderful.
And her concert debut at the club, Sterling's Upstairs at the Federal, which is... And we are thrilled to have her.
There was something in L.A. culture
In the Los Angeles Times?
Yes.
Big ad for her.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Lovely. And when is that taking place?
That's Sunday. This coming Sunday. Exciting. And 5:30, 6 p.m. Dinner seating, because it's a separate club, and a 7 p.m. performance.
And let them know where Sterling's is.
It's at the Federal, which is in North Hollywood at 5303 Lancashire Boulevard, right across from the famous El Portal Theater.
Valet parking.
Do they make good old fashions there?
They do.
Make everything.
Wow. Okay. Jules was on that.
From experience.
Excellent. Thank you.
California gourmet and great drinks. Yeah.
Mark, it's been a pleasure. Jules, Mark,
Jules, thank you for coming.
Before we sign off, Mark, would you share one more time how people can attend Jules?
Absolutely. It's A or B. I do with a question mark at the Falcon Theater, and that is on Riverside Drive in Burbank, opposite Bob's Big Boy. And they can call for tickets at 818-955-8101 or the easier way, falcontheater.com.
And theater has the R-E spelling, just to remind you. The right way.
The affected way. Commonwealth way.
What a pleasure.
Yes, what a pleasure. And Mark, congratulations. What a great first outing with you.
I had a fantastic time.
We didn't even tell people that you're even working all the equipment today.
It's all been seamless, has it not?
I'm impressed.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So do I stop now?
You got to wrap it up.
We'll see you next time on State of the Art.
See you on the radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strohle, right here on LA Talk Radio.